Okay, good morning. I'm going to talk about cloud services in Dutch higher education. And I will do that from this perspective. We're a quite small country, 16.5 million inhabitants. And at Servnet, we are offering services to about 1 million of those 16.5 people. And that's the people that are working or studying in higher education or research. We've got three focus areas in which we do things. I'm pretty much used to talking about first thing here, the hybrid end-to-end network. We're the ISP for most of the connected institutions. So we provide a full redundant 10 gig IP service to any institution, as well as point-to-point light paths. But I'm not going to talk about the network after this minute during this presentation. I'll concentrate on the other two, the collaboration environment and trusted identity. And in all three areas, we provide services, we do innovation, but we also try to act as a broker, and that's what's relevant when it comes to cloud services. Okay, so what are the main advantages of cloud services? Well, they're here. Feature-rich, of course, short development cycles, especially if you compare that to the... especially if you compare that to the development cycle that we usually have as an NREN. The look and feel is, of course, familiar to the end user, especially to the students. And, of course, from an ICT management perspective, it often results in a cost reduction. So why this talk? Well, about 2 years ago, we were approached by both Google and Microsoft about at the same time with special offers for higher education in the Netherlands, especially focusing on online collaboration. So that's Google Apps and Microsoft Live at EDU. I guess you know what they're offering. And if not, they're here on the floor, I noticed yesterday. So, but the problem we faced there, or the problem the connected institutions faced there, was that there are quite some unclear specifications, at least there were at the time, 2 years ago. And on top of that, vendors were used to targeting connected institutions individually. And that's not the most efficient method, also not from their perspective. So this is what Google Apps and Microsoft Live at EDU look like. So we thought of a response, and we thought of that together with the universities in the Netherlands, and we decided to join forces under the SURF umbrella. There are different sister companies under this umbrella. SURFnet is one of them. SURFdiensten is another one. They're also here with a couple of people, and they do the negotiations. They're much better than us in doing that. We're more the technical organization. And we connect them, we hook them up to the Federation and those kind of things. But we decided to join forces as Dutch universities, and by that we were able to talk with one single voice to vendors. Intention of these negotiations was to gain a clear understanding of all organizational, contractual, and technical details of the offer. Bottom line is that we wanted to get equal conditions for all the connected institutions. Not having the first university to step in to gain a first mover advantage, but equal conditions for all. And then from the perspective of vendors, there's also quite an advantage. If you have to negotiate with 160 institutions in a very tiny country, that's not going to scale. So they now have a single gateway to 160 organizations, and like I mentioned, about 1 million users. And what you get then, well, the typical university in the Netherlands has some 20,000 users. So you see that here. And if you compare these two, and the blue one would be Microsoft, I think this is definitely not exaggerated. And if you combine the demand of all the universities, where you get about 1 million users versus still very large cloud providers, so wouldn't it be nice to get into a situation, gentlemen, like it is here on the slide. So we've got within Terena a task force now that's called Management of Service Portfolios, and we're exchanging experience in this area between NRENs. I know that your organization is active there as well, and that's good because we're all basically doing the same thing, negotiating with the same vendors, of course. Well, functional aspects, I don't really think I should go into this very deep because I guess you know it, but this is all from an end-user perspective, and the bottom line is, well, both Microsoft and Google really offer a compelling service if you ask students, teachers, or researchers. from an ICT manager perspective, it's a bit more complicated. They really want to have that look and feel, even if they're using, for instance, Google for email in the back. They want to have access to log files, want to have direct connections, direct communication with specialists that provide support. And for all these reasons, many ICT institutions are not that eager to adopt the cloud. But then on the other hand, and I'll come back to that later, we see quite some serious interest as well. So the picture is a bit mixed currently. Well, of course, these contracts with cloud vendors are non-exclusive. A typical university should be able to use cloud services from any vendor they would like to choose for. They should be able to benefit from the diversity that's really there now in the cloud and then mix and match. Interoperability is really a problem there. Many cloud offerings are web-based, but not all of them. If you, for instance, look at Microsoft, well, they, of course, have Office on most of the desktops, and hence these rich clients have some advantages as well, so they're really struggling in finding the right balance. Then, of course, there's multi-operating systems. I'm standing here beside a different one than I'm currently using. Complicates things a bit, and, of course, you see all sorts of mobile devices, which also complicates things a little bit. When you look at identity management, and that's where ServNet comes in, because that's one of the things we do, then, of course, cloud vendors, most of them, that is, suggest, well, let us just take care of your user accounts. But in at least in Dutch higher education, universities, ICT managers of universities especially, don't want to go that way, and that's basically for two reasons. On the one hand, it has to do with the fact that if you don't use your own identity management, you would have as many user credentials to use as applications that you're having on your desktop. So from a user experience point of view, it's really good to be able to use your home credentials when you log into the services of a commercial cloud vendor. And then, of course, there's privacy and security, and it all has to do with trust. And we find that students are not that aware of privacy in the Netherlands anymore. They used to be. Not sure why that is, but it is what we see. But the ICT managers and definitely the lawyers within universities consider this to be very important. So for each user, we focus on one user account of the home organization. It should be stored and managed at the home organization, and it should be able it should be used both to access internal as well as external services. So like I mentioned, that's where the Surf Federation, or as we call it in Dutch, the Surf Federatie, comes in. And that's a system, well, I know that most of the Enrons currently have one. On the one hand, we connect universities at the moment, and it took us about 2.5 years to do that. All the universities, and there's about 50 of those in the Netherlands, are now connected to the Surf Federation as an identity provider. And on the other hand, we've got service providers, including cloud vendors, and we've got a couple of them connected, and I'll show you which ones on one of the next slides. Surf Federation basically acts as an authentication hub. It interconnects the IDPs and the SPs, but like I mentioned, I know you suppose you know the concept, and it also serves for protocol translation, although that used to be important. We started out with Aselect, for instance. I know the Danes have been using it or are still using it. Okay. And, of course, there's ADFS and the Shibboleth and all sort of different protocols, but it now seems to focus on SAML 2.0 and protocol translation is becoming less and less important. And the main advantage is that each organization, being a university or a vendor, is just having one single connection to this hub and then can connect to any other one that is connected. So this is basically what you see on the bottom line. You see the universities and above in the picture the different service providers. And Surf Federation interconnects all those. So I was going to talk about cloud providers, but I needed a bit of an introduction. We currently have both Google and Microsoft connected, and that was quite of a strain. When you look at Google, if you look at just the the physical connection that only took 2 weeks, so it was quite easy. That's because of these protocols. And if you look to Microsoft, that was quite a bit complicated, and it took us 2 years of, well, and a lot of time. But in the end, we haven't really succeeded yet, but we're quite confident that we will succeed in about 1 or 2 months from now. But I've got a slide with more specifics on that later on. And then if you look at the solutions that both providers are offering, then these are the issues that you generally would have discussions with them on, apart from the technical issues. Because of the tight time schedule, I'll not go into this, but I'm quite sure you're quite familiar with these.
Can you tell us how it worked out? Where is your data being stored now?
Okay, I'll come back to that later, because it's different for Google and Microsoft. Actually, it's right here. So if you look at Google, it's quite an unclear statement, and it still is, even though we've been really pressing on them, but it still is, and that's really a showstopper for most of the universities in the Netherlands. And that's also the reason why Microsoft is really concluding contracts in the Netherlands with universities, because they've got quite a clear statement there. Their data storage is in Dublin, which is in Ireland in the European Union, so under European regulation. And then they've got their backup in Amsterdam, which is even better, we think. So this is really a clear proposition from that point of view. I talked a bit about the timelines when it came to the physical connection of both Google and Microsoft to a federation. If you look at the contracts, it's completely turned around in the sense that contracting with Google took us about 2 years, 1.5 years maybe. And that's primarily because they're used to talking and contracting with end users. Well, not contracting, but offering a proposition to end users, whereas we want them to talk in this single voice, like I mentioned, with us, that is through an NREN. Whereas Microsoft has had contracts with our sister company, Surfdiensten, for about 15 years, I guess. So they're used to talking with one specific entity that can talk on behalf of all the Dutch universities. So that's quite different. And so with Microsoft, we had a contract in no time, but like I mentioned, physical connection took 2 years. So in the end, we started with both in 2008, and like I said, we hope to have both operational, both in terms of contracts as well as technical, from a technical perspective, later this year. We've done pilots with both of them, and we learned that you should start small and then scale fast, and that's possible. Google started out at your Open University. You could compare that to the University of Phoenix here in the U.S., I think. And Microsoft is doing a pilot currently at the University of Tilburg. We have an arrangement with both universities that they will share their experience gained with, at least the other universities in the Netherlands, but also with universities abroad. So we put it all on the website and try to be as transparent as possible. And that's also why I'm being quite frank about what we did in this presentation. So we try to share experiences and also any terrain task force that I mentioned in the broader NREN community. So what's the current status? Well, if you look at Google, we currently have five universities that are using Google, but some are still in a pilot phase, and they're not all connected to the federation yet. And if you look at Microsoft, well, they're planning on a new release of Live at EDU. That's going to be there in October here in the U.S., and 1 month later is what we understand in November. And that should really be compatible with the things we ask from them when it comes to the Surf Federation. And that's also the time schedule for the University of Tilburg. So they planned to go live this year, and Microsoft has guaranteed them and us and all the other universities that that's going to happen. So we have three other universities in the Netherlands lined up. They will go live early 2011, and many others that plan to adopt Live at EDU. I think I sort of covered this. Yeah. Well, I just mentioned Google and Microsoft, of course, because that's what we have been focusing on over the past 2 years. They had a clear proposition. But there are some other ones, and I believe they're all here on the floor, that we're currently negotiating with. Adobe is Adobe Connect, Liferay, and Alfresco is basically document sharing. Cisco is WebEx, and IBM is Lotus. And Blackboard, of course, is quite important for the universities in the Netherlands. And we all hope to connect those to the Surf Federation on quite short notice. Well, next steps are increasing, and that refers to the previous slide, the number of service providers that currently connect to the Surf Federation. And then there's the launch of a collaboration infrastructure based on Open Social in December 2010. And now I wanted to check the time, because how many minutes do I have left?
Four.
Okay, I have got a movie that takes 2 minutes, some coin. So I should.
Yeah,
okay. I'll show a few slides then. I'll try to do that in 2 minutes, and then I'll show the well, I said movie, it's basically an animation. The coin project, it should result in an infrastructure, and that is later this year. We started this about 1.5 years ago. And this infrastructure builds on the concept of the Surf Federation. So it is about federated identity management, but it's also about group middleware. It's based on Grouper, developed here in the US. And, of course, collaboration tools provided by all the commercial vendors that just showed on the slides. And in the end, we hope to create an infrastructure that supports team collaboration, teams with users from different organizations, virtual organizations, and we hope to support campus use, so campus administrators can use a combination of local services and cloud services and present them as one using Open Social gadgets to their end users. Well, these are the main features. I'm not going to into that unless you have specific questions, but we'll see that. So this is the concept of the federation. You see the end user with his key. You see the federation, and you have to, well, jump over that or whatever to gain access to the different services that you find there. And then, oh shit, what did I do? Okay, sorry. The problem with this federation is that if you have University X and University X has chosen for SharePoint, then you have a user here and you have a user that's really able to make use of SharePoint for document sharing with other users from the same university. But now suppose that this user is collaborating with a user in another university, and that university Y has not chosen to use SharePoint but, well, for instance, Google Apps. Then you could have a team of users within University Y, and it's no problem at all. But suppose we have this situation, you really have a problem. And we wanted to solve this, and that is what Coin is all about. And if you would have this, then it would be possible to make use of all these nice applications that we're going to connect to the Coin concept. So basically, this is what it looks like. On the lower left side, you see the team. With users from different institutions, you still have the Surf Federation, and you still get access to many services that we're not offering, but that are being offered by commercial providers. And you see some middleware engine there in the right. And well, universities can present it. This is not done very nicely, but the left thing is the website, a mashup of all these different services that could be an Open Social website. And on the right-hand side, you see the same thing, but then on a mobile device. If you want to know more, we've got some pointers included in the slides. Like I mentioned, we have been working on this for quite some time now, so there's really a lot of information, especially in the blog. But also on the website, of course. And I'll now go into the animation.
Imagine you're a researcher or a lecturer, and you're participating in a project with colleagues in various organizations. To collaborate efficiently, you'll almost certainly use the Internet. There are many collaboration tools available on the web. For example, tools for document sharing, planning meetings, having chat sessions, or video conferences. Besides these, researchers also need tools to exchange references and research data. And lecturers like to have access to learning management systems. You have your own favorite online applications, just as your colleagues have theirs. Therefore, online collaboration may pose a problem. Each application needs a specific user account. And for each application, you will always have to set up permissions for those team members that are allowed to access the content. Furthermore, these separate applications cannot be linked to each other, so exchanging content will be practically impossible. That's why SurfNet joined forces with a wide range of partners to develop a new collaboration infrastructure that allows online collaboration in a smart, safe, and easy way. You can log on to each application with your own familiar user account, the account of your own organization. The configuration of your team needs to be set up only once, and you can reuse it for other applications. By using open standards, the infrastructure links the various applications. As such, files and content can be exchanged between systems. This means that you are free to choose those online tools that best suit your needs, without restricting yourself to the product of one provider. This way, new collaboration possibilities are created, and online collaboration becomes even easier and more efficient. SurfNet. We make innovation work.
I'm not sure whether we're really there yet. It's becoming fully operational in December, so we still have about, 2 months. And that's also the time period in which these things should be clear. But maybe, Rui, you can add something to that?
You're right.
But the platform is going live December. We've got a huge customer event then December this year. And that's just one application that is really of interest to our end users, and that's document sharing. We currently have a platform based on Microsoft SharePoint. We're phasing that out next year, so we need to have an alternative, and we're going to present that in December. But that'll be based on LiveRay or Alfresco, one of the things you'll see that. But before, like we mentioned, we have the full Quorin infrastructure available, including a really good answer to the question you just posed. That might take us some time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Did you have it?
Okay.
So my name is Jacob, Jacob Mattson, and I'm from WAFE, as I said earlier. Nice presentation, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm going to talk about the cross-federation shared services and some of the things that we experience in that field in WAFE in Denmark. A few demographics. We have about 5.5 million citizens, so we are a very small country, not just a small one. Of that, there's 4.3 million adults above 18, and we do have 1.2 million citizens under education, which is quite a few. We do have three public identity federations in Denmark, not competing, but helping one another out. NemLogin is by far the national, the biggest, and the new national EID federation. It contains, as of now, 3.5 million vetted users. We do have UniLogin, which is all pupils, K-12 pupils, around 700,000 vetted users. And then we do have WAFE with 4.5 million vetted users. We kind of piggybacking on the other ones. So that's just the scenario we work in. I said NemLogin is the federation, and it's a special federation. It's a federation with only one identity provider called NemID. NemID is an identity provider run by the banks of Denmark. All banks in Denmark collaborate, and they have created this NemID. So all banks uses NemID, all web banks uses the same login mechanism across the country. So if you want to operate in Denmark as a bank, you have to use NemID. That's how it is. All insurance companies, more or less, uses NemID as well. Pension funds, the same, uses NemID. This is commercial vendors. Nothing public about that. Labor unions uses NemID as the login mechanism. The state lottery uses a NIM login, a NIM ID as pharmacies, so you can order your medicine online, uses NIM ID. And then an important one is that we do have a public federation called NIM login, which uses only one identity provider, NIM ID. And that, I'll come back to that later. The login mechanism is the web bank login, so it's familiar for everybody. It's known, it's easy to use. So using your web login to your bank can give you access to all sorts of other services as well. The second factor being this little cart with numbers on it. So this is my two factor. Whenever I only have like 40 codes back, I'll be mailed to my home address a new card. And if I'm going abroad, I can just order an extra one. So that's a two-factor authentication mechanism. Next one is about the NIM login federation, the Danish NIM login federation, and I used some symbols that I think is familiar to you. Gives you access, single sign-on access to your health, hospitals, information about yourself in hospitals. It gives you access to IRS, Danish version, that the public funding house, I think it's called here, of Denmark. We do have a portal called citizen.dk, bor.dk, where you collect all sorts of information. Around hundreds different services is connected as of now to NIM login. And then we have WAVE, which acts as a service. So we have a federation acting as a service in another federation. So WAVE is a service in the NIM login federation. And this is WAVE, how we perceive ourselves. We do have logins from all universities, university colleges, lots of high schools, K-12 institutions, and so on. And then in this context, we do have a login from NIM login. So using your bank ID gives you access to the public services and can in turn give you access to WAVE services, which is interesting. And this is just a picture of some of the vendors we do use. It's LMSs, CMSs, sorts, different. And I'll just point out that I wrote down Kalmar 2, which is an international federation between the Scandinavian countries that you can gain access to also from WAVE.
So do the banks get paid every time your transaction or authentication happens?
Nope. I'm just running that, and it's slow, so it doesn't matter. It's just it's so difficult to tell it. It's much easier just to show what happens. This is, I'll come back to you. This is IRS. I'm logging into that, and that's me personally. I was on a slow line doing this demo, so there'll be just a bit of waiting. And putting in your username and password, and then finding my cart, putting in the number. So that's one time. If I use services within the public federation called NIM login, I only need to sign in once. If I want to access my web bank from here, I need to sign in with the same mechanism again because it's not part of the federation. But that was me logging into IRS. Now I'm going to a university. I'm going to a service at a university. And I did log in with the same thing. But this time it's part of the national federation. So I would just, I suppose, I would just single sign on into the institution, the institution's system. And I kind of did. I did prepare a few notes on that institutions. NIM login, some of the public services, I've just linked to those. Taking out a few WAVE services, very commercial. I'm doing e-academy stuff now. Still using my national EID actually to gain access to that. So I'm going to buy some software. And before transporting my information, we do consent. We do consent on all services. So I accept that. And I'm like,
showed the attributes
that's being released and the purpose of the service.
And people understand that?
Yeah, we've cut down the purpose of the service to an SMS. That's enough, a claim from our side. So going out of that service, just showing that I could access all the internal stuff from the university, still based on my e-identity. And last, logging into a service in Finland, that the university knows nothing about, but we do have this Kalmar Interfederation Union where we do share services. So the trust relation between WAVE and the other Nordic partners makes it possible to log in to services up there, even though we don't know anything about them.
We could, yeah.
And again, we don't release, from WAVE's point of view, we don't release any information without asking for consent. So this one is another release policy. And now I've gained access to a Finnish LMS for whatever purpose that would have. And just to show that, I might go back in context. I'm ending off by going into my national funding house, still single sign-on. So the architecture, which is totally similar to the Dutch's, gives us the ability to jump between different contexts and using different trust frameworks because we can map into that, and we have great fun of that. It's just personal information of sorts. So I guess that was the thing. During the work we've done here, there was some business cases about it. The most important one was actually that it could be possible for a student to reset their password at a university. So the help desk cost was important. We've been up and running for a few months with that. And one of the universities we've calculated, and they have at least saved between 1 or 2 man-weeks as of now, a very small university. It's an easy way for potential customers to access university systems, ask for uptake or stuff like that. The price of integration when we do it at WAVE is negligible, and value can be high for the universities. And then, least but not last, you can give access to national systems from within the university portal. So I think that's more or less it.
So I'm going to drop down from the heady European perspective to the much grittier North American, and particularly the even more gritty Canadian perspective. So I'm Jens Heuser, and my day job is the Director of Strategy at the University of British Columbia, but I also moonlight as the Technical Strategist and International Liaison for the Canadian Access Federation. I'm going to talk a little bit about some shared services from the Canadian perspective. Just to set things up, Canada is the usual fractured landscape where we have a whole bunch of funders, mostly flowing from the federal government through a number of research funding arms. Those flow to a number of service providers, the National Research Network, HPC cluster, others like that. But unfortunately, due to the way that funding flows, there are some really significant gaps, particularly when we look at middleware, particularly when we look at cyber infrastructure in Canada. And the question really for us moving forward as a Canadian higher ed sector is, how do we deal with this fragmentation? How do we deal with the fact we don't have a good vision now? How do we deal with the fact that we have technical gaps, policy gaps, human resource gaps? Really, we have a very uncertain future. We know that to remain competitive, to remain good partners with our R&E federations around the world, we need to do something. So how do we get there? Just a little bit more about the Canadian context. We sit at over 200 higher education institutions across the country. Almost all of Canadian higher education institutions are publicly funded, with the bulk of the money coming from provincial governments, some flowing federally. We have over 1 million students just in the post-secondary, add another million for K-12 as well. There are three main actors that have been playing at the national level that have been relating to cyber infrastructure. Canary is the research network. It's been around for 20 years. And unlike Internet 2, when Canary was first created, it did not have a middleware mission. It was really focusing on the network layer, on providing a light path between the various disparate parts of the country. Compute Canada is a much newer organization. It started in roughly 2007, and it's not it's a national HPC platform, not a national HPC delivery arm. It does funding and coordination to seven regional supercomputing clusters. It doesn't actually run anything itself. And the newest kid on the block is CUCIO, the Canadian University Council of Chief Information Officers, which was also founded in 2007, when the CIOs in Canada realized they had no place to go and talk other than EDUCAUSE. They had no voice at the national level, so they founded this new CUCIO organization. And CUCIO recognized from the very beginning that shared services were a key need and a key driver for getting together as CIOs, and that federated access management was really the key enabler that needed to be started first. So from the very get-go, CUCIO has supported federated access management pilots. Canary, as I mentioned, is the national research network. It's on the fifth generation now since 1990. It's also a hybrid network that does both IP and Lightpath-based services. The IP backbone connects 12 regional networks, interconnects with over 100 other research networks around the world. It doesn't provide commodity internet. It's just high-speed research networking. And while Canary hasn't really gone far down the middleware route, it has, particularly over the last few years, funded what it's called network-enabled platforms. And these are really research-specific, domain-specific applications. For example, the Canadian Brain Imaging Research Network is a platform for doing high-speed data processing and sharing brain imaging across the country. Science Studio is a interesting new experiment management platform that allows, for example, researchers to manage the Canadian light source from anywhere in Canada and looking at making this a more broad platform for doing research management. But these are fairly high up the stack. These are not middleware pieces. These are really some e-science bits that, again, are quite domain-specific. So it was increasingly recognized over the last few years that Canada needed to get its act together around cyber infrastructure, needed to get its act together around shared services. We see the wonderful example of what the Europeans are doing and what the U.S. is doing. And we realized that we had some significant challenges. We had a real lack of a policy framework, a lack of governance, a huge lack of coordination between all the funding and the delivery agencies. That funding is very fragmented. There doesn't exist today in Canada any large-scale middleware or any large-scale shared services, and above and beyond all of that, we have some significant challenges around resourcing with people and with knowledge. So to move this forward, Canary, in conjunction with CUCIO and Compute Canada, sponsored a series of workshops and get-togethers and consultations that really culminated in a call for action for actually creating a national cyber infrastructure strategy in Canada. And there really was an emerging vision that we do actually need a coordinated research or cyber infrastructure Canada group that can coordinate all of this activity between Canary, CUCIO, Compute Canada, all the other various actors. Now, one of the things that we recognized in this process that a key enabler for any of the shared services that we want to run, a key enabler for doing anything in the cyber infrastructure space, is identity and access management, and particularly doing access management services. Fortunately, through some work that CUCIO and others in Canada have been doing since around 2007, we had been exploring the federated access space. This work was initially sponsored by CUCIO as well as some of the regional networks, and it is currently transitioning from being supported by the CIO community to actually being part of the National Research Network, where we think it's actually a better home and has a better chance of getting national funding. We set out from the beginning to create policy-first trust federations, so rather than starting with a technology like Shibboleth or a technology like Eduroam, we said the real value of a federation is that it's a trust fabric and a trust framework. that can manage both technology but also policies and trust agreements between the various parties. And as the others have mentioned, it provides real efficiencies, both operational efficiencies but also efficiencies in setting up contracts and negotiating with vendors, all of those kind of areas. In Canada, the Canadian Access Federation allows participants from higher education institutions, public research institutions, as well as sponsored service providers. So if you are a company that does business with any of the first two, you can say, please let them join the federation, and they can join. We have an expanding list of services for faculty, staff, and students, mostly supporting interinstitutional collaboration. The two big ones we have right now are Eduroam, which looks at wireless mobility, and Shibboleth, which is the technology that was demonstrated by the other federations, which looks more at web applications. And we've been heavily partnering with other national organizations, libraries, research consortiums. What's Eduroam? Hasn't been talked about here before. It stands for Education Roaming. It was set up in Europe back in 2003 to do with the roaming scholar problem, where in Europe cities are much closer together. Researchers were traveling between cities much more often than they do here in North America. So they wanted to do something to allow users that visited other institutions to use their home credentials to access the remote wireless network. It leverages some pre-existing technologies, radio servers, which most campuses had, and a technology called 802.1x, which allows for both private and secure in roaming. The username and password are never exposed to the visiting institution. They're tunneled directly back to your home institution. Originally, back when we started looking at this in 2007, the only places you could do EduRoam were all through Europe and a couple of Pacific Rim countries. Now, EduRoam is available in over 1,000 institutions all around the world, including 25 in Canada and a dozen now in the U.S., we're very excited to say. And EduRoam usage is now growing day by day. It took us a very short time to move from pilot to production. We started in November of 2007. Hiring a project manager, splitting into a technical and a policy working group. Within 6 months, we had 5 sites up and running for a provincial conference. A few months later, we had another number of institutions up and running for a national conference. And at the same time that we connected the 8 institutions across the country, we also connected those 8 institutions to the global EduRoam roaming framework. There's a very simple onboarding process for EduRoam. There's a standard template using Jira and Confluence to get people up to speed very quickly. It really starts with a policy sign-off in the institution, then the technical implementation. For onboarding a new member, it takes us centrally maybe 2 hours to 2-person days. And on top of that, it's roughly 1-person day a month to keep the federation, the EduRoam Federation, running. For the schools that are doing their local implementation, if they already have 802.1x set up and WPA, it takes them as little as half a day. If they don't have secure wireless, it can take up to a month. We've seen rapid growth of the service from a few hundred users a day to now we're seeing peaks of 80,000 authentications in a month. And we've learned a number of very interesting things. First of all, leveraging existing collaborations. We leveraged the fact that we were already getting together in local regional networks, at national conferences, to talk and to share ideas. We, from the get-go, separated the policy from the technical implementation so neither side would be bogged down for waiting for the other. By targeting focal events, conferences, saying, you know what, we want to showcase this at the next conference, that became a real advantage for the schools that went in early, and then for the next year's conference, every other school wanted to join. We really tried, as much as we could, not to centrally locate all the expertise, but to really share the experiences and the best practices among all of the connecting institutions. And one thing that we were initially shy about was talking to the international folks, but the international community was so welcoming and so helpful that connecting with that community earlier for support rather than later is a very good practice. And we found that, you know, if we build it, they will come.
In common has taken a much more conservative approach to services, I won't go into all of that, but we're offering very little compared to what COIN is offering or what the Danes are offering. We don't even have an EduRoam service out of our federation right now, but we're certainly looking at it. So what's steering these decisions? I think it's a distinction between what needs federation and what we should operate. So shared trust fabrics are needed for almost everything inter-realm at this point. I think people got that piece, that it's TCP/IP one level up. And there's real value in minimizing the complexity of managing trust. I think we want a single trust fabric. We talked about it in TCP/IP land. We talked about the narrow waist of TCP/IP. This is even worse, because what can make it wider is lawyers, very expensive, the user experience and the confusion, the technologies. So I think we want a single federation in this country, but that federation shouldn't operate many services. I think our criteria, and this is evolving, is I think we're going to only operate those services that are mostly trust. What is that? Well, certainly the federation itself. The certificate offering is mostly trust. I think roaming access, you're not really consuming any resources other than, you know, a little bit of bandwidth. But I think for everything else, we're going to hope that other people build and use in common in their building process. So we have no plans to, at this point, to operate a cloud. There is some conversation going on about there's even an RFP on the streets that in common is talking about, or Internet 2 at least, is around an open cloud for higher education. But I don't think we're going to operate it. I think we're just going to leverage in common in that. The same with the content providers. I don't think we were very close to offering a collaboration platform like COIN, and now I think we're backing away from it. Solely because it's been very difficult to move it forward. And so I think we're hoping that somebody else will do it. If COIN wants to open up in New Amsterdam, a service, we'll give you Manhattan back in return for a collaboration service. So I think that's going to be our rule of thumb going forward. And I don't want to get into any more slides, but I think we're going to be the most narrow of federations in terms of our service offerings, if only because capitalism suggests that we should enable a lot of things but operate very little. So I guess at that point we can handle some questions from...